Parliament Acts, from Wikipedia to the Encyclopedia at http://en.wikipedia.org. The Parliament Acts are two Acts of Parliament of the United Kingdom, passed in 1911 and 1949 respectively. They form part of the Constitution of the United Kingdom. The first Parliament Act, the Parliament Act 1911, 1 and 2 GO5 Chapter 13, asserted the supremacy of the House of Commons by limiting the legislation blocking powers of the House of Lords, the suspensory veto. Providing the provisions of the Act are met, legislation can be passed without the approval of the House of Lords. Additionally, the 1911 Act amended the Septennial Act to reduce the maximum permitted time between general elections from 7 years to 5 years. The first Parliament Act was amended by the second Parliament Act, the Parliament Act 1949, 12, 13 and 14 GO6 Chapter 103, which further limited the power of the Lords by reducing the time that they could delay bills from 2 years to one. The Parliament Acts have been used to pass legislation against the wishes of the House of Lords on only 7 occasions since 1911, including the passing of the Parliament Act 1949. Doubt which had existed in academic circles concerning the validity of the 1949 Act were refuted in 2005 when members of the Countryside Alliance unsuccessfully challenged the validity of the Hunting Act 2004, which had been passed under the auspices of the Act. In October 2005, the House of Lords dismissed the Alliance's appeal against the decision, with an unusually large panel of 9 Law Lords holding that the 1949 Act was a valid Act of Parliament. Chapter 1. Parliament Act 1911. The purpose of the Parliament Act 1911 is explained by its long title. Quote, "An act to make provision with respect to the powers of the House of Lords in relation to those in the House of Commons, and to limit the duration of Parliament." Chapter 1.1. Background to the 1911 Act. The 1911 Act was a reaction to the clash between the Liberal government and the House of Lords, culminating in the so-called People's Budget of 1909. In this budget, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, David Lloyd George, proposed the introduction of a land tax based on the ideas of the American tax reformer Henry George. This new tax would have had a major effect on large landowners and was opposed by the Conservative opposition, many of whom were large landowners themselves. The Conservatives believed that money should be raised through the introduction of tariffs on imports, thus helping British industry. The Conservatives used their large majority in the Lords to vote down the budget, but the Liberals built on the widespread unpopularity of the Lords to make reducing the power of the Lords an important issue of the January 1910 general election. The Liberals returned in a hung Parliament after the election. Their call for action against the Lords had energised believers in hereditary principle to vote for the Conservatives, but had failed to generate much interest with the rest of the voting public. The Liberals formed a minority government in coalition with Labour and Irish MPs. The Lords subsequently accepted the budget when the land tax proposal was dropped. It was declared unconstitutional in any event. However, as a result of the dispute over the budget, the new government introduced resolutions that would later form the Parliament Bill to limit the power of the Lords. The Prime Minister, Herbert Henry Asquith, asked Edward VII to create sufficient new Liberal peers to pass the bill if the Lords rejected it. The King assented, provided that Asquith went back to the polls to obtain an explicit mandate for the constitutional change. The Lords voted this 1910 bill down, so Asquith called a second general election in December 1910, and again formed a minority government. Edward VII had died in May 1910, but George V agreed that, if necessary, he would create hundreds of new Liberal peers to neutralise the Conservative majority in the Lords. The Conservative Lords then backed down, and on the 10th of August 1911, the House of Lords passed the Parliament Act by a narrow 131-114 vote, with the support of some 24 Conservative peers and 11 of 13 Lord Spiritual, who normally do not vote. The Parliament Act was intended as a temporary measure. The preamble states, quote, "Whereas it is intended to substitute for the House of Lords as it at present exists, a second chamber constituted on a popular instead of hereditary basis, but such substitution cannot be immediately brought into operation." End quote. However, the Liberal government did not follow through with reform of the House of Lords, and the composition of the Lords remained much the same for another 50 years, until life peers were introduced in 1958. Despite further calls for change, the position remained the same until the Labour government, elected in 1997, took the first steps to reform the Lords. The House of Lords Act 1999 reduced the number of hereditary peers entitled to attend and vote in the Lords. However, as of 2006, there is no elected representation in the Second Chamber. Chapter 1.2 Provisions of the 1911 Act. The 1911 Act prevented the Lords from vetoing any public legislation that originated in and had been approved by the Commons, and imposed a maximum legislative delay of 1 month for money bills, those dealing with taxation, and 2 years for other types of bill. The Speaker was given the power to certify which bills are classified as money bills. If a money bill is not passed by the Lords without amendment within 1 month after it is received, the bill can be presented for royal assent without being passed by the Lords. For other public bills, the 1911 Act originally provided that a rejected bill would become law without the Lords' consent if it were passed by the Commons in 3 successive sessions, provided that 2 years elapsed between second reading of the bill and its final passing in the Commons. The 1911 Act still allowed the Lords to veto a bill to prolong the lifetime of a Parliament, and it could only be used to force through a bill originating in the Commons, so the Lords also retained the power to veto any bill originating within the House of Lords. In addition to curtailing the power of the Lords, the 1911 Act amended the Septennial Act 1715, reducing the maximum duration of any Parliament from 7 years to 5. And provided for members of Parliament, excluding government ministers, to be paid £400 per year. Chapter 2. Parliament Act 1949. Immediately after the Second World War, the Labour government of Clement Attlee decided to amend the 1911 Act to further reduce the power of the Lords, as a result of their fears that their radical programme of nationalisation would be delayed by the Lords, and hence would not be completed within the life of the Parliament. A bill was introduced in 1947 to reduce the time the Lords could delay bills from 3 sessions over 2 years to 2 sessions over 1 year. The Lords attempted to block this change. The bill was reintroduced in 1948 and again in 1949, before the 1911 Act was finally used to force it through. Since the 1911 Act required a delay over 3 sessions, a special short session of Parliament was introduced in 1948, with a King's Speech on the 14th of September 1948 and a prorogation on the 25th of October. The amended Parliament Act was never used in the 1940s or 1950s, possibly because the mere threat of it was enough. The Salisbury Convention that the Lords would not block government bills that were mentioned in the government's manifesto dates from this time. Salisbury believed that since, that in being returned to power, the government was given a clear mandate for the policies proposed in its manifesto, it would be improper for the Lords to frustrate such legislation. Acts passed under the Parliament Act display a modified form of enacting formula. Quote, "Be it enacted by the Queen's Most Excellent Majesty, by and with the advice and consent of the Commons in this present Parliament assembled, in accordance with the provisions of the Parliament Acts 1911 and 1949, and by the authority of the same, as follows." End quote. The usual enacting formula, used on other acts, also refers to the advice and consent of the Lords Spiritual and Temporal, and omits the reference to the Parliament Acts. Chapter 3. Use of the Parliament Acts. The Parliament Acts have been used only a handful of times. The 1911 Act was used in its unamended form only 3 times between 1911 and 1949. These were 1. The Welsh Church Act 1914, under which the Welsh part of the Church of England was disestablished in 1920, becoming the Church of Wales. 2. The Home Rule Act 1914, which would have established a Home Rule government in Ireland. Its implementation was blocked due to the First World War. 3. The Parliament Act 1949, which amended the Parliament Act 1911, as discussed above. The amended form of the 1911 Act has been used 4 times in recent years. These were 1. The War Crimes Act 1991, which extended jurisdiction of UK courts to acts committed on behalf of Nazi Germany during the Second World War, the only time that the Parliament Acts have been used by a Conservative government. 2. The European Parliamentary Elections Act 1999, which changed the system of elections to the European Parliament from first past the post to a form of proportional representation. 3. The Sexual Offences Amendment Act 2000, which equalised the age of consent for male homosexual sexual activities with that for heterosexual and lesbian sexual activities at 16. 4. The Hunting Act 2004, which prohibited hare coursing and, subject to some exceptions, all hunting of wild mammals, particularly foxes, with dogs, taking effect in early 2005. Since Tony Blair's Labour government came to power in 1997, there has been repeated speculation that the government would rely on the Parliament Acts to reverse a check from the Lords. In the event the Parliament Acts were not required to enact, for example, the Criminal Justice Mode of Trial No. 2 Bill in 2000, which originally proposed to give magistrates, not defendants, the choice of where an either-way offence would be tried. The Parliament Acts still cannot be used to force through legislation that originated in the House of Lords, so they could not have been used to enact the Civil Partnerships Act 2004 or the Constitutional Reform Act 2005. The first three measures were not mentioned in manifestos, and hence in trying to veto them, the Lords was not breaking the Salisbury Convention. The Hunting Bill was mentioned in the Labour Party manifesto for the 2001 general election, so, depending on how the Convention is interpreted, the attempt to block it could be taken as a breach. The threat of the Parliament Acts has been employed by several British governments to force the Lords to accept its legislation. In at least 3 cases, the procedure set out in the Parliament Acts was started, but the legislation was approved by the House of Lords as a result of the government making concessions. These were 1. The Temperance Scotland Act 1913, which allowed the voters in a district to hold a poll to vote on whether their district went dry or remained wet. 2. The Trade Union and Labour Relations Amendment Act 1976, which amended the Trade Union and Labour Relations Act 1974 to reverse changes made to that Act as it passed through Parliament. 3. The Aircraft and Shipbuilding Industries Act 1977, which nationalised large parts of the UK aerospace and shipbuilding industries and established 2 corporations, British Aerospace and British Shipbuilders. Chapter 4. Validity of the 1949 Act. Since the 1949 Act became law, doubts were raised by legal academics as to whether the use of the 1911 Act to pass the 1949 Act, which amended the 1911 Act itself, was valid. 3 main concerns were raised. 1. The continued ability of the House of Lords to veto a bill to prolong the life of Parliament would not be entrenched if the 1911 Act could be used to amend itself first, removing this restriction. 2. The 1949 Act could be considered to be secondary legislation, since it depended for its validity on another Act, the 1911 Act, and the principle that the courts will respect an Act of Parliament without inquiring into its origins, an emanation of parliamentary sovereignty, would not apply. 3. Under the 1911 Act, Parliament, that is, the Commons and the Lords acting together, delegated its ability to pass legislation to another body, the Commons alone, following legal principles established when the United Kingdom granted legislative powers to assemblies in its colonies in the late 1700s. A subordinate legislative body cannot use the Act under which legislative power was delegated to it to expand its competence without an express power to do so in the Enabling Act. To address these concerns, a law lord, Lord Donaldson of Lymington, presented a private member's bill in the House of Lords in the 2000-2001 session of Parliament called the Parliament Acts Amendment Bill, which would have had the effect of confirming the legitimacy of the 1949 Act, but prohibiting any further such uses of the Parliament Act to amend itself, or use of it to further modify or curtail the powers of the House of Lords. Another Parliament Acts Amendment Bill was introduced independently in the next session, but neither of these bills proceeded to a third reading. The third legal challenge to the 1949 Act is believed to have been made during the first prosecution for war crimes under the War Crimes Act 1991, R. v. Serafinowicz, but no record of the legal arguments remains. Because a second defendant was prosecuted under the War Crimes Act and was sentenced to life imprisonment, and since the War Crimes Act was later amended by both two further acts, the Criminal Justice and Public Order Act 1994 and the Criminal Procedure and Investigations Act 1996, which were passed by both houses and received royal assent, the validity of the War Crimes Act is not under question. The 1949 Act and the validity of acts made under it were not questioned in court again until the Parliament Acts were used to pass the Hunting Act 2004. Early in 2005, the Countryside Alliance took a case to court to challenge the validity of the 1949 Act. In the High Court, the wording of the 1911 Act was held not to imply any entrenchment. Support for this conclusion can be drawn from the parliamentary debates on the 1911 Act, in which an entrenchment clause was considered but rejected, the government clearly displaying the intention to be able to make such amendments if necessary. However, the 2005 decision was made on other grounds, so the question of whether the courts could refer to the 1949 Act's parliamentary debates and the principle established in Pepper v. Hart was not decided. The High Court held that the 1949 Act was primary legislation, despite being unusual in that the courts can rule on whether the provisions of the 1911 Act are complied with. It was held that the 1911 Act clearly permits the procedures specified in the Parliament Acts to be used for any public bill, and this was sufficient to dispose of the argument that the 1911 Act could not be used to amend itself. The Court took the view that the 1911 Act was a remodelling of the Constitution rather than a delegation of power. The subsequent Court of Appeal ruling agreed that the 1949 Act itself was valid, but left open the question of whether the Commons could use the Parliament Act to make significant changes to the Constitution, for example, repealing the Parliament Act's provision prohibiting the Act from being used to extend the lifespan of Parliament. The Court of Appeal refused to give the Countryside Alliance permission to appeal their decision to the House of Lords. However, a petition for permission to appeal was submitted directly to the Law Lords and granted in July 2005. Argument in the case was heard on the 13th and the 14th of July 2005 by a large committee of 9 Law Lords rather than the normal 5. In a unanimous decision, the Law Lords upheld the validity of the 1949 Act. Chapter 5. Future Developments. After the first stage of reform of the House of Lords was implemented in the House of Lords Act 1999, the Wakeham Royal Commission on the proposal of a second stage of reform reported in January 2000. Subsequently, the government decided to take no action to change the legislative relationship between the House of Commons and the House of Lords. In March 2006, it was reported that the government is considering removing the ability of the Lords to delay legislation that arises as a result of manifesto commitments, and reducing their ability to delay other legislation to a period of 60 days. This is the end of the article. This sound file and all text in the article are licensed under the GNU Free Documentation License, available at www.gnu.org/copyleft/fdl.html.